your boss can fire you, you can't fire your boss. So that creates this inherent power imbalance, and it makes people intimidated.
Welcome to Hardly Working, a podcast about how we can improve work, life, and everything in between. These are recordings from live conversations on Fishbowl, a social network where professionals of the same industry have anonymous career conversations. You can join us live next time on the Fishbowl app. We have events every day. Okay, let's get started.
Welcome, everybody. Hello, Fishbowl. My name is Moshe Cohen. I am the author of Collywobbles, How to Negotiate When Negotiating Makes You Nervous. And I teach negotiation both at Boston University in the business school and in companies worldwide. I'm here with my co-host, Diana White. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Moshe. Hello to everyone. My name is Diana Chang. I'm a mediator trainer and director of corporate programs at MWI, which is a mediation firm. And I teach negotiation at Suffolk University Law School. So I'm really happy to be joining Moshe and all of you here today.
Well, excellent. This is my first time on Fishbowl. And you can follow us by clicking on our profile to be notified of future conversations. We're going to be talking about negotiation. Both of us teach negotiation classes, and we interact both with students and professionals. And over the years, we've encountered a lot of challenges that people have when they're negotiating, and we wanted to discuss some of those. This is the first of a three-part series, and today we're going to focus on negotiation challenges and how to deal with them. From my personal experience, and from teaching others, what I found is that we were teaching people skills and strategies around negotiation. And then when they went to go use them, something happened. They'd get excited, they'd get nervous, they'd get anxious. Something would happen between the execution and the theory that made people a lot less effective and made them unable to advocate for themselves the way they really wanted to. So we started to think about what is the cause of that. And the main thing is, it's not that they don't necessarily know what to do, but that something else is getting in the way. And the thing that gets in the way a lot is their emotions. So the idea behind Collywobbles was to combine emotional intelligence and negotiation to allow people to use the skills that they have and to allow them to use all this great preparation that they've done going into negotiation. So that's what we're going to talk about for this session is what are some of the challenges we've seen? What's the impact of those challenges? And what are some things people can do to try to manage those challenges so they can actually negotiate effectively for themselves? As we said, we welcome questions both in the chat, and sorry, both as DM and as raised hands. We'll try to manage those as best we can. Like I said, we're both new to Fishbowl, so if we mismanage this, you know, please cut us a little bit of slack. And Dana, I was just going to kick it off to you and say, you know, working with your students or with some of the professionals that you've dealt with, what's one thing that people find challenging about negotiations?
I'd say probably coming into it and being nervous about the process one way or another. People will have some knowledge and strategies or, you know, examples of what they've done negotiating before. You know, have you ever bought a car? Have you ever had a conversation with your significant other? But knowing how to take the experience that they have and then the skills of being a more advanced negotiator and what the tools are that they can do to further it. So I'd say probably being nervous about being unprepared or inexperienced comes up most frequently coming into the course in my experience. And I don't know if you have a similar experience with your students.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you use the words unprepared and inexperienced. And I think those things are related, but they're also a little different. So unprepared really involves not knowing what to do, not knowing what information you're going to need, not knowing what the other party is going to throw at you, not knowing what are the rules of the game in this particular kind of negotiation. And there's a lot to learn. It's a complicated process. And people often feel like there's so much out there to learn and I don't know any of it. And there's a lot of uncertainty in this process. And uncertainty makes people really, really nervous. So just not knowing what to do makes people anxious. The second thing is that a lot of people don't feel like they negotiate formally very frequently. Now, personally, I think that we negotiate any time we need to make a decision with somebody else and we don't start off in the same place. So I think we negotiate all day, every day, but we often don't think of ourselves as negotiating when we're doing that. We think of negotiating around things like buying a car, buying a house, negotiating a salary, negotiating with a client. Those are things that are more formal negotiations. And some of those we do so infrequently that we feel like serial novices. You know, for me personally, I'm the kind of person who will buy a car and then drive it into the ground. So it could be 5, 6, 7, 8 years between times that I buy a car. And that means that every time I go to buy a car, it's as if it's the first time because I don't remember what I did 6 years ago. Whereas in my perception, the car dealer does this every day. So I feel like a novice negotiating with an expert. So therefore, it feels like the other party has more power. And I think a lot of people find themselves in situations like that where they're doing something infrequently enough that they feel inexperienced. And that they don't feel like they're on a level playing field with the other person.
And the concerns with that too, Moshe, you know, talking about, you know, the impact, worrying about damaging a relationship. If I say or do the wrong thing, how is this going to, you know, impact the dynamic going forward? And, you know, navigating those as they come up, in addition to the emotions that come up in the negotiation process, can really be a challenge. And I know that that's one of the things we're going to be talking about today and in the future sessions as well, is how do you navigate it as it comes up?
Yeah, that happens a lot. So first of all, I think a lot of people don't like conflict and they associate negotiations with conflict because negotiations only happen when people disagree. So if you don't disagree, there's nothing to negotiate. And therefore, when you're negotiating, there's going to be a certain amount of conflict. And people feel very, very uncomfortable with that. And one of the things that makes them so uncomfortable is that I think people have a false dichotomy in their mind between getting the outcomes that they care about and the relationship with the other party. I think we very often think like, oh, if I push for the outcomes I want, I run the danger of damaging the relationship with the other party. Whereas if I care a lot about the relationship, then I got to hold back from asking for what I want. And that worry adds a layer of anxiety that goes into the negotiation before they even say hello to the other party. Now, on top of that, I think that negotiations, like everything else in life, happens in moments. And you might have prepared for the negotiation, but then something happens in a moment that people become emotionally overwhelmed and panic. So, for example, you propose something that's perfectly reasonable to the other party and they just flat out refuse it and walk out of the room. And now you don't know what to do. Or the other party starts getting upset with you and starts yelling and you don't know how to deal with that. Or maybe the other party gives you an ultimatum and you don't know how to manage that ultimatum, or they start asking you questions that you don't know how to answer. There are so many unexpected things that happen in the negotiation process that cause people to feel emotionally overwhelmed, that not only are they managing their generalized anxiety about the process, but the big challenge is how to negotiate those tough moments.
So yeah, there's multiple layers to that, Moshe. The split second decision of what do I do next, but you know what follows that? And making those decisions under pressure. So sometimes being unsure of what the next steps are and worrying about those relationships. And so looking at the impact of all of these concerns and other ones that come up, I don't know if we want to ask the group if there are any other experiences they have had in negotiations that may have been challenging or the impact on it.
You know, one thing you just said, though, about you know, making decisions, and Jameson, we're going to invite you just onto stage in just 1 second. Negotiation involves a series of decisions, right? The other party gives you an offer and you have to decide what to do with that, or you have to decide where to start. And you have to decide when to walk away. And a lot of times that really impacts people's confidence in what they should do next regarding these decisions. All right, so I'm going to invite...
Yeah, I like what you said last. When to just walk away. That's, I've gone through an experience where, you know, it's an employer feeling like they underperform and, you know, and leaving on terms that, you know, on bad terms. I guess it's a hard way to communicate. There's nothing that can be done about the situation other than, you know, just let each party walk, you know, their separate ways.
So I hear you. I think that the basic premise of a negotiation is that when we're negotiating with each other, you have needs you're trying to meet. I have needs I'm trying to meet. And there are some situations in which there is no way to meet both sets of needs. And then people have to go their separate ways. And really, there's nothing wrong with that, except very often there's some bad feeling around that, especially if people feel like it wasn't necessary to walk away, but something happened in the negotiation process where either people miscommunicated or somebody got offended, and or someone acted in bad faith, and that can leave a real bad taste in people's mouth about walking away. And, you know, it's really important to be able to walk away. And yet you have to, everything you do, you have to do in a way that takes into account what's the impact of that going to be on the conversation, on the relationship with the other party.
And the other piece of that, too, is that there are always two perspectives. So, you know, the example you gave, Jameson, there may be the employer and employee. And this kind of goes to a topic we'll be talking about a little bit later, which is the narratives. What's your perception coming in? What's your counterpart's perception coming in? And then how does that change throughout the process? So it's a great point. We'll be definitely talking about perspectives and kind of stories and narratives. Great. Looks like we also have Chester that has something to say.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Perfectly.
Okay. Thank you both for putting this together. Again, this is, I'm sure, extremely invaluable to everybody. One of the things, like, when you were discussing conflict, I was thinking about a book that I'd recently read from a gentleman named Chris Voss called Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as Though Your Life Depended on It. And in the book, he talked about something called tactical empathy. And basically, my understanding of it is you're essentially acknowledging and validating the other person's viewpoint on things, even when you don't agree with it. So I guess my question is, do either you, Moshe, or you, Diana, think that it's important to start with a sort of let's start with what we agree on type of stance and then move from there? Or do you think it would be better to, when you find disagreements that may surface, try to then validate that person's viewpoint, even when you don't agree with it? In other words, essentially kind of using that almost as a way to try to recalibrate, or for lack of a better phrase, get the negotiation back on track so that it's not derailed.
So, Dana, I'm wondering if I can just jump in on that one.
Yeah, of course.
So I know Chris, and we've spoken on panels together and we're friendly. The idea of empathy is a very powerful one. I'm not sure that it always needs to be tactical. I'm more in favor of just overall empathy. But the way I define empathy is demonstrating to the other person that you get where they're coming from. Not telling them that you get where they're coming from, but demonstrating it by being able to reflect back what you see is going on with them. So, you know, if I'm talking to, let's say, one of my employees, and my employee says something like, well, if I don't get a 15% raise, you know, I'm going to leave. A way to demonstrate empathy to that is to say, so it sounds like this, you know, getting better compensation is something that's super important to you. Now, you notice in doing that, I didn't say whether I agree with it or I don't agree with it, whether I think it's the right thing to do or not the right thing to do. All I'm saying is, I've heard what you say, and I get it, that from your point of view, this is really important to you. And that then opens the door for me to ask further questions about it, to engage the other person in conversation, to bring in what my concerns are. Once you empathize and demonstrate the understanding, that then gives you license and latitude to go in any number of directions. The problem is, if you don't demonstrate empathy, the other person closes themselves off to you. They will no longer listen to what you have to say because they'll be focused on saying what they said over and over and over again, or demonstrating through some action that they were serious because they need to be heard. So yes, empathy, it doesn't need to be tactical. It can be genuine. And I'm, as mediators, both Diana and I work as mediators, and very often someone will say something that doesn't make any sense to us or is completely off the wall, and yet it makes 100% sense from their point of view. And the process won't move forward until we demonstrate that we've heard them and understood them. So I really think that empathy needs to be genuine.
Yeah, and I like what you said about kind of the acknowledgement piece, Moshe. It doesn't mean we have to agree or disagree with what they're saying, but a lot of times people come into a negotiation process wanting to be heard, know that what they're saying is valid. So you don't have to necessarily say you're right or wrong, but it's acknowledging, you know, this is what you're saying and this is why it's important to you. And, you know, how can you relate it back to the conversation that you're having about the particular negotiation topic? So I think that's really important to acknowledge it, Chester. I think we had Ebony that requested as well. I don't know if your hand is still raised, Ebony.
Well, as I'm heading back, definitely appreciate both of your insight, Moshe and Diana. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So invite another speaker.
Go ahead.
So Manasi. Is that how you say it? You want to introduce yourself and your question?
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Hey. Yeah, this is a great talk. So I negotiate daily all the time on everything, prices, agreements, terms. And I just wondered if the panel had any kind of suggestion. So I don't want to ever sacrifice the good for the perfect, but I negotiate so frequently. Sometimes the win is just agreement. Sometimes the win is something more. And I know it's kind of a vague question, but when to push, like if we get agreements, and that's good enough, but there's room for more. Is there any guidance that you might offer as far as taking the low end of what's a win versus the high end and kind of discerning that with some kind of a structure?
So that's a very, very interesting question. Well, when you decide how good is good enough, that's essentially your question, right? How do I know when to stop? How do I know when to accept the deal?
Right.
And, you know, I think that is a very important piece of your preparation prior to going into the negotiation. Your decision on what's good enough needs to be based on as much objective data and facts as you can, because during the negotiation, you're going to be impacted by things that the other party says or does. You're going to be impacted by your emotions. You know, if let's say you're negotiating for a job offer and the question is, all right, do I accept this? Do I push for more? You're also managing your fear of potentially losing the offer. So trying to make those decisions in real time is very, very challenging. And that's where preparation really comes in, because you need to know, all right, for this kind of job, here's roughly speaking the range. This is the low amount. This is the high amount. Here's how it changes depending on where I am geographically. Here are some of the factors in terms of my education and experience, et cetera, that impact that raise. So the more that you are rooted in real information, the easier that decision is to make. The second thing is, and Diana, feel free to jump in, but I've got like a couple things that I wanted to add to that first, is you need to know what your interests are. What do you care about in this situation? Do you care about, let's say, I'm breaking into a new field and what I really care about is getting my foot in the door because I've never done product management before. And once I'm in, then I'll have product management experience and I'll be able to get even better product management jobs. Or are you more concerned about, I just bought a house and I need to be able to pay the mortgage, so I need to get to a certain salary level, or I just can't afford to take this job. So based on your interests, you need to make the decision of what's really driving me here. And that'll also drive the decision of how much is too much or how much is enough. The third thing is you need to know yourself. You need to know, how are you with risk? Because all negotiations are risky. Anything you do in a negotiation involves risk. And some people are more tolerant of risk, and some people are really risk averse. And if you are willing to tolerate the risk of potentially losing the offer, well, then you can afford to push harder. And, you know, life is statistical. You win some, you lose some. But the farther you push, the more the odds shift in terms of not getting the offer. And how far to go with that is partly based on your tolerance for that risk.
Yeah, I would say knowing your goals and expectations coming into the process and sort of prioritizing that. Going back to what Moshe was saying about preparation, what do you want and why is it important to you? And if you were to sort of make a list of that and figure out at what point is the risk too much, or are you compromising too much to get something? that would be kind of helpful in navigating when it's time to walk away, or if you're going to do it, you know, intentionally, why would you be walking away from what's on the table that you're negotiating about? Is that helpful, Ebony?
That is. Thank you both.
There was a question that came in on the DM that I just wanted to address. And that is, what if you're negotiating with someone and you got a verbal agreement, but now when it comes time to formalizing the agreement, the other person is going back on some of the things that they'd said verbally? And especially if this is a relationship you care about and that you suspect that they're doing that, not because of bad faith or ill intent, but because when they made the verbal agreement, they hadn't thought through exactly what that, all the implications are. And it's really their inexperience that's driving that. And the question then is, how do you negotiate for the outcome that you're expecting based on the verbal agreement while also nurturing the relationship with the other party? So I'm hoping I captured the question right. And, you know, my first thought on that is to start by reviewing the verbal agreement, not necessarily coming in huffy and saying, hey, you agreed to this, now why are you going back? But just to say, you know, we had this conversation before. Here is my understanding based on that conversation. And to sort of get to a baseline of what you understood the agreement to be and what they understood the agreement to be. I got to tell you, as a mediator, my experience has been that many disputes result from verbal agreements. And we often have verbal agreements with people we trust, but the problem is verbal agreements open up the door to all sorts of misunderstanding. And even the best intentioned people can get offended, can get, can feel bad about what happened, you know, stemming from a misunderstanding. So even in a verbal agreement, right after you do that, why don't you make a bullet point email of here's what I think we agreed to and share it with the other party. And that way you might be able to prevent some of those misunderstandings and not wait until some time down the road when you've come to formalize the agreement. And now people are feeling like you're there in bad faith.
I agree with that totally, Moshe, and clarifying as you go. And if there is room for interpretation, making sure that you acknowledge it as the process unfolds. I find that one of the most challenging points is when you have had a verbal agreement, you know, in mediations, and people are getting to the agreement writing phase. And when someone says one sentence, one person interprets it this way and the other party interprets it a different way. So doing as much as you can to clarify, you know, terms and specifications early on avoids things kind of unfolding at the tail end, a misinterpretation later.
Now, I see a couple of people have their hands up, Manasseh and Bank, and I want to invite both of you to speak. And then I'm thinking maybe it would be good if, Diana, you and I continued with some of the content just to get a little farther along in the ideas we wanted to share.
Sure, of course. Sounds good. I did have one, actually, Manasseh's hands raised. So I have the question in a direct chat too. So the question was, how do we overcome negotiations with seniors while having a doubt whether you are good enough?
The first thing you need to do is assess the impact of the power difference on you. You know, when you're negotiating with someone who is above you in the hierarchy, there's a couple of different effects there. One is the fact that they have power over you in a way that you don't have power over them. Typically, your boss can fire you, you can't fire your boss. So that creates this inherent power imbalance. And that power imbalance actually does something to you. Very often, it makes people intimidated because just in their mind, they're thinking, oh, I'm negotiating with this person who is much more senior in the organization. The other part is that very often the person who's more senior has been around longer, has more substantive knowledge, knows more, has negotiated more. So not only are they more senior in the organization, but they might be more knowledgeable and competent than you are as a negotiator. And that can also put you on the back foot as a negotiator. Now, power differences are just a part of life. There are very few negotiations where the power is divided equally between both parties. And this is just one example of a power differential. Now, the power differences are there, but you need to first ask yourself, what is the impact of that on me? Now, I'll give you an example. For me, I don't really get that concerned when I'm negotiating with somebody senior versus somebody more junior, because just the way I grew up in my family, we got taught that everybody's kind of a person. So hierarchy doesn't impact me, but a lot of people are incredibly impacted by hierarchy. So if that difference in power causes you to feel avoidant or to feel like you don't know what to say, you know, I know people who go to talk to their boss and they have a plan and they've prepared. And then as they approach their boss's door, they find they can't breathe. And that's a much harder thing. It turns out breathing is very helpful when you're negotiating. So then the first thing you need to do is to learn to recognize and manage what's happening to you on the emotional level, and to be able to bring yourself to a point where you can have a conversation, any conversation, with the other person. Part of doing that is really preparing. And if you find yourself in a situation where you are likely to be either intimidated or flustered or confused in the middle of the negotiation, bring your notes in writing and make your notes simple enough and legible enough that you can look at them during the negotiation. And if you're concerned about how the other person might react to you having notes, just address that at the outset. To said, hey, you know, say, you know, hey, in preparation for this conversation, I made some notes for myself so I don't forget some things. Is that okay? And very few people will react badly to that. So what you want to do is you want to set yourself up for success in that situation. Having said that, you need to know what is and isn't negotiable, because there are some conversations where you're negotiating with someone who has set the rules in a particular direction, and therefore, some of that may not be negotiable because they're making the same rules for everybody and they're not going to make an exception for you. Within that, though, there might be some pieces that are negotiable, and if you can understand what those are and focus on them, then you might be more successful in negotiating where you can.
And as to the having doubt piece, knowing whether or not you're valuable or whether you are good enough, I think it's making that sort of list that Moshe was talking about and preparing in advance. So what do you contribute to the conversation if you can anticipate the negotiation between you and your boss? What do you bring to the table? So kind of knowing that in advance, and if you're kind of questioning whether you're good enough or your value or what you can contribute, sort of mentally preparing beforehand can be really helpful in not getting, you know, tongue-tied as the conversations are going on. So I think that preparation piece really makes a difference in feeling like you have something to offer in the conversation or negotiation.
The other thing I would say is, if you don't know what to say, ask a question. Because I've gotten into trouble much more in my life by saying things than by asking about things. So when you feel confused or flustered, or your boss says something and you don't know how to respond to it, listen carefully to what your boss just said and then ask a question about it. And while they're answering your question, you might also get to a better place in terms of how to respond. I noticed the bank had a hand up before.
Yeah, it's gone down. So bank.
Okay. No back. and then we'll get to Arslan.
Thank you, Anasi, for your question.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Thanks so much for this session. I had a question about when, just pointers on what to look out for when a new contract comes in for a new job. It's my first time switching over to a new job. I've been in my old job for a number of years now and about to switch. Got a verbal offer, but not the contract yet. I just want to know if there are not for when I receive it and things that I can negotiate on besides salary.
So that depends a lot on the position. You know, so generally, when we look at career negotiations, we suggest to look at the whole package. So there might be salary, there might be relocation, there might be tuition benefit, there might be a bonus, there might be several different kinds of bonus, actually, there might be stock options. There could be all sorts of different things, but a lot of that will depend very specifically on what kind of job, what kind of company, where the situation is. So it's hard to answer that generically. The first thing I would say is anytime you get into, you get a contract, the most important thing to do is to read that contract carefully. And I got to tell you personally, I find that really difficult, because that level of attention to detail and reading the wording of the contract is just not something I'm particularly good at. So what I suggest is if you are good at that, go ahead and read it. If you aren't good in that, find a friend, family member, coworker, someone who is good at that attention to detail to just help go through the contract with you to be able to see what the details are, because negotiations very often live or die by the details. And I'm not a good detail person. So I know that if that's the situation, I need to bring, you know, fortunately, I have friends who are much better at detail than I am. So I can bring them into that conversation.
And that goes to preparing and using resources you have available. So if you have a trusted advisor, friend, colleague, utilizing that, you know, in a negotiation, it's also easier to have someone else that's not emotionally attached to it sometimes review it too. So I think having a third party, if it's someone you know and trust that can help you, that can be a good strategy as well. Thank you, Bank.
And by the way, we apologize if we mispronounce names because it's just, we're just guessing.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Arsalan, I think you're next.
Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. All right. Okay. So basically my question, first of all, thanks for hosting this session. So my question is, let's say I apply for a job and under that umbrella, there could be different investments that you could be supporting for. And you know that that team handles a lot of different type of investments. And let's say if I get the offer, is it like, how do I negotiate with them that, hey, I would really like to be exclusively working for this one type of investments or line of work? I wouldn't want to be working on these different products. I would want to stick to this one line of work or one line of investments exclusively, because this is what I want to make my career out of in the future. So I want to kind of specialize in that. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not like a very strange request, but just like, you know, how would you put it very nicely or in a very positive way?
So, you know, I think this is, and we can generalize this way beyond investments. I mean, let's pretend that you are, you know, applying into a department, and the department has a number of different roles in it that you might be a fit for three different roles, but you're really only interested in one. So it's really that same situation. And the first thing you need to realize is that when you interview with the company, you know, you're interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you. So one of the things that you're trying to see is there a fit between what they're doing and what I want to do? And sometimes you have to come to the conclusion that that's not a fit and that you're going to have to walk away. And that could be really difficult, you know, especially if you have nothing better to walk away to. Within that conversation that you're having, Bo, about this job negotiation, you need to decide what's more important to you, getting the job or getting that specific role within the organization. And if what you've said, let's say, is that to yourself, is that this role is where you see your future, and you're willing to walk away from the company if that role isn't the one that they have you slotted for, you need to be able to understand that and be able to do that. So that's part of your preparation, is to understand what your red lines are. And so let me just give you an example. I mean, let's pretend that you have decided, I'm just completely pretending, that you only want to work on environmentally sustainable investments. And the organization has all sorts of different investments, including some investments that you're completely not interested in or even feel some sort of negative feelings about. You have to decide, you know, how badly do you need the job with this firm? Or might you walk away and find this kind of job elsewhere? Now, the other thing that you can do is decide, well, it's better for me to get my foot in the door in this firm and work on different kinds of investments. And then once I've established myself there, I'm going to then petition to move over to these investments. I'm going to take the risk that that would happen. Either path is fine, but you need to understand what's more important to you in terms of, you know, do I really need to get this job, or do I need to be, you know, strict with myself and only get this job if I can get these kind of investments? What you want to do, though, is clarify to them what it is that you're interested in. And you also want to include in that a bit of the whys. Why is that so important to me? Because you know, in negotiation, we distinguish between the positions that people say, which is I want to, you know, work on these kinds of investments, and the underlying needs and motivations that cause them to say that. The more you can express yourself in terms of those underlying needs and motivations, the more likely you are to be able to convince the other party without offending them.
And I think that goes back to one of the things we were talking about earlier, Moshe, with sort of fears and stress factors and things that come up going into any negotiation, and how people can best prepare to know, again, more about yourself, what's challenging, and then manage those emotions as they come up, no matter the format, whether you're applying for a job, whether it's, you know, you're leaving, whether you're evaluating, you know, the content itself. It's really kind of knowing more about those emotions and stress factors. So I don't know if we want to kind of shift gears and we can open up for questions a little bit more at the end.
So I see that there were a couple other questions. There's a question in the DM, and there's and Tawfiq, I see you have your hand up. I'm wondering if we can come back to you in just a little bit, because I wanted to talk a little bit about the impact of these challenges. We already said, yeah, negotiations are very challenging, but the impacts of these challenges are actually pretty severe. And I think one of the big impacts that happens is that people avoid negotiating altogether. And when people avoid negotiating, very often they don't get anything. They don't get any of their interests met. They don't build the relationship with the other party. And avoiding can have very detrimental effects over time. So for instance, if you have a concern about, let's say, your career advancement with your employer, but you're so nervous to talk about it that you're not even willing to engage in the conversation, over time, you're going to get more and more resentful. And at some point, you might just get up and leave and lose a job that could have been a good job had you engaged with your employer and worked things out. So avoiding is one of the challenges that happens. And the other thing that happens is that because people don't know what to do, they arrive unprepared. And one of the worst things that can happen to you in a negotiation is surprises. You know, you want to minimize surprises in negotiation. They're going to happen anyway, but you want to minimize them by being as prepared as you can. One of the things that happens, I think, when people get nervous in negotiations, they start talking a lot. And I like the saying that we have two ears and one mouth, and we should use them in proportion. You get into trouble by talking. And very often, you know, I can think of so many times where I get nervous and I said something that I later regretted in the negotiation. Either I gave away information that I didn't want to give away, or I said something that offended the other person, or I gave them something, I made a concession that I didn't want to make. And a lot of that just comes because I got anxious, because I got nervous, and then I said something. A lot of times people forget to ask questions, and questions are so essential when you're negotiating. And because they're nervous, they also rush to try to end them as quickly as possible. As a result, they end up coming to bad agreements. They give away things they didn't need to give away. And conversely, they can also damage the relationship by becoming very positional and very stubborn about things that maybe aren't the most important to them in the negotiation.
I think that relationship piece is really important, you know, knowing what you're willing to, you know, give up. You know, concessions is one way of looking at it, or, you know, not making impulsive decisions. And so being able to navigate your concerns as they come up, your counterpart's response as it comes up, and really being aware of the big picture as well as the minute-to-minute you know, emotions arising. And that kind of brings us to the narratives piece, Moshe. I think that's really helpful to kind of talk about emotions as they come up and what we can do to, you know, tactfully navigate negotiations.
So, you know, when it comes to your emotional reactions to negotiation, it's helpful to separate what happens in the moment to what happens to you overall. And very briefly, talking about what happens overall, you know, I think a lot of people bring a lot of fear into their negotiations. We're afraid, first of all, that something bad will happen. If I ask for more, I'll get nothing. If I push for a higher salary, they'll rescind the offer. If I you know, try to be assertive, they might retaliate against me. So that's tangible hurt. And people are really concerned about something bad happening in the negotiation. The second one is relationship damage. I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and said, I want to ask my boss for a raise, but I'm afraid of damaging the relationship. And from my perspective, you know, if you can damage your relationship by asking your boss for a raise, there's probably a problem in that relationship to begin with. And the chances that your boss will say yes or you will say no are pretty high. The chance that you'll actually damage the relationship is actually much lower, but our fear of that is really, really high. And the third fear I think people bring into their negotiations is emotional pain. You know, negotiations involve rejection. They involve high emotion. We don't like it when people are upset with us. We want to feel like we treated other people fairly, and we don't, you know, sometimes people will accuse us of being unfair and that doesn't feel so good. Or sometimes we feel like other people are treating us unfairly. So a lot of times there's a lot of emotional pain that has to do with negotiations. Now, those fears tend to get amplified through a number of stress factors, probably the biggest one being conflict. You know, we associate conflict with so many negative things, right? We feel like in conflict, there's going to be tangible hurt, relationship damage, or emotional pain. And another big one is uncertainty. And I don't know if you've ever wondered why almost every kid in the world is afraid of the dark. And that's because they can't see what's there. And what we can't see, we can imagine. And we can imagine some pretty scary things. And negotiations are inherently uncertain. You don't know at the outset how it's going to turn out. You don't know what surprises the other person has in store for you. You don't know how skilled they are. You don't know anything. And very often, that uncertainty amplifies whatever fears you bring into the situation. And the third one we talked about is, somebody mentioned power perception. If you perceive yourself to be in a lower power position, then you feel like the other person has the power to inflict relationship damage, emotional pain, or tangible hurt on you. Now,
please. Yeah, I was going to say, and there's that inherent fear too, Moshe, of hearing the word no, being told no, or having to say no, and mm-hmm. kind of what the impact of that will be. And kind of asking yourself a little bit more about why, you know, you're so concerned and diving further into the emotions. And then also, what are they saying no to? So sometimes we get caught up in our own heads of what we anticipate is going to happen, but you can kind of break it down into subcategories based on these topics that Moshe's talking about.
And that's a really good point. And that gets us to our last point in terms of the overall emotion that comes in, which is that a lot of times our fears are driven by the things we tell ourselves. Now, we have stories in our mind, narratives that really define our experience. So if my narrative is, if I ask for something and my boss says no, my boss is going to hate me. Well, now I associate no with my boss hating me, and it becomes almost impossible for me to ask for stuff. So one of the things that you really want to think about is, what are you telling yourself during the negotiation? And if you have a hard time doing that, that's a great place to engage a friend, again, a family member, a colleague, somebody, to have them ask you, what are you saying to yourself right now? See, because in life, there's what happens to you, but then there's your experience of what happens to you. And your experience is largely driven by the stuff you tell yourself. If you're negotiating, let's say, with a company, and you're thinking, I'm just an individual, this is a 10,000 person company, I have no power here. Well, that becomes really self-fulfilling because you just psyched yourself right out of that negotiation. But if instead you can understand what you're telling yourself and what's the impact of that, and then you remember that they're talking to you and they're talking to you for a reason, you can actually change that narrative. You can say, all right, they might be a big company, but they've chosen to take some of their busy time and talk to me, and they must have a really good reason for that. And by doing that, by rewriting your narrative, you become the author of your narrative rather than the victim of your own narrative. And too often, we end up being the victims of our own narratives just because of the stuff we're telling ourselves. Very briefly, I'm going to say one more thing, and then I think we should just open it up to questions. That's the stuff that happens kind of in the big picture, but you also need to manage the moments. You see, anything that happens to you, anything anybody says or does, any situation you walk into, impacts you on the emotional level first. And emotions hit you very hard and very fast. So you give a proposal to your client, thinking it's a very reasonable proposal, and your client bursts into tears. And immediately you have an emotional reaction to that. And I've seen people make concessions just because the other person started to cry. And it doesn't have to be tears. It could be that they get upset, or it could be that they give you, before you can even give them their offer, they make their first demand, and it is so extreme that it takes your breath away. So anything that happens will create this emotional spike. And one of the things that you need to do is learn how to slow yourself down, slow down time in a negotiation to let your rational brain catch up to your emotional brain. You know, there's a part of our brain that processes emotion, and a different part that processes thought. And the part that processes emotion is just faster. Now, eventually, your thinking brain catches up. And if you give it time, it can make better decisions. But one of the things you need to learn to do is to slow down time as you're negotiating. To do that, you have to be able to identify what kind of things tend to throw you off. And if you can give some thought and list some of the people, situations, or actions that cause you to become emotionally triggered, that's going to help you. Then you have to catch yourself when you've been triggered. Now, your body gives you some clues, right? Your heart rate goes up, your breathing changes, your muscles tense. Things happen to you that give you a clue that, whoa, something just happened to me on the emotional level. And then once you notice that, you need to stop and slow down time. And you can slow down time just by saying nothing, staying silent. You can slow down time by asking questions instead of speaking. You can slow down time by asking for a break, by saying, let me get back to you on this. But the principle is you need to manage those moments, because otherwise, during an emotional spike, you will make a concession you didn't want to make. You'll agree to something you didn't want to agree to, or you will say something that might offend the other party. So those are the two things. Understand yourself in terms of your fears, the impact of these stress factors and narratives. Understand yourself more generally, but then also manage these moments by learning to catch yourself when you're emotionally overloaded and slowing down. So now, Diana, you know, I want to invite you to add something, and then I just want to open the floor to whoever has questions for the rest of the session.
Yeah, I really like kind of the summary there, and then keeping in mind there are two sides to it, right? So there's the narrative going on in your head and then your counterpart. So it's not just what's going on in your head, but what you're saying, what you're communicating, knowing that anything that's said between you and your counterpart, it's the message that's being said and then how it's being received. So if you can deliver the same information, you know, in a tactful way by slowing down, using any of those strategies Moshe talked about, it's easier to actually maintain a good relationship, even if it's challenging to discuss it. So kind of keeping that in the back of your mind. But I think it's great if we open it up to questions. I think we had Tawfiq, and then we had Kathleen.
And there is one in the chat as well. So in the DM. Let me just address the one from the DM while we're waiting for people to come on the stage. So the question in the DM was, you've come to an agreement, and then as you go to implement it, the other party changes something, and you are now confronted with something that is a lot less favorable for you. You know, to my mind, that's actually an unethical practice. You know, people come to agreement, and then you should expect them to stick with those agreements. But if you find yourself in a situation where someone has abruptly just offered you one thing, but then delivered something else, the first thing you will need to do is stop and slow down. Because in that moment, you're very likely to panic. And either you're going to accept this inferior deal just because you've panicked, or you might walk away without trying to negotiate for a good outcome for yourself. So the first thing you want to do is just slow down, breathe, and then acknowledge what happened and just say, you know, this is different from what I understood it was going to be. I understood that we agreed to this, and now you're presenting me with this. And then turn the floor to them by saying, can you tell me a little bit about what's happening here? Because that'll achieve a number of things. One, it'll give you some time to regroup and think about how you're going to deal with the situation. But it also puts them on notice that you noticed what happened here, and that you're expecting them to offer some sort of explanation. So it restores the power back in your favor, because by surprising you like that, they actually put the situation very much against you and put you on the back foot. If you can then, through acknowledging the situation, restore some of that power, then you're in a position to think, okay, do I still want this? First of all, are these people I want to do business with? And if so, how do I explain to them that what I was interested in before was this other thing we'd agreed to rather than the thing that they're offering me now? And to see what choices there are in terms of getting back to that thing or coming to a different agreement.
Great. And Tawfiq, hopefully you can hear
me. Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
So Tawfiq, then Gafir.
Thank you very much for this, both of you. So earlier you mentioned something about knowing or drawing a red line, knowing the kind of things that you want or not want. But then also there are times when people always say you should learn how to do what you must before you can do what you want or walk around your comfort zone. So how do you kind of marry the two aspects when you're kind of presented with something that you don't want, but then you have to find a way to do that for a while, especially in the case of having limited time to kind of make a decision where it's kind of in between what you desire and what you're willing to do. So it's not quite a zero on one. How do you kind of marry both aspects, if that makes sense?
So I'm happy to try taking that, Diana, and feel free to jump in as well. So all negotiations occur in light of the alternatives available to the parties if they don't come to an agreement. The better your alternatives, the stronger your hand in the negotiation. Now, there are times when your alternatives are pretty good. You're negotiating with a company for a job offer, but you have six other offers. In that case, if you don't like what they're offering you, you have the choice of going somewhere else. But I'll give you an example for my students. I work a lot with international students. And they're applying for OPT and need sponsorship. And very often their choices are a lot more limited. So if the company offers them something that is, let's say, a lower salary than they want or a lower title than they want, a lot of times they're faced with a choice of either take this lower position or take this lower salary or take the risk that they might find nothing and not be able to stay. So this is very, very common. And it's not, that's just not the only example, but that just happened to come up very recently with one of my students. And then you have to, first of all, I just understand your risk tolerance, because that might be too risky for you and you might have to accept something that's not so good. The other thing that you need to understand is what does the company need from you? What are their interests? And how can you use their interest to negotiate a better situation for yourself? So the idea is, don't panic, slow down, engage them in conversation. And yeah, I agree with you. There are red lines, but sometimes those red lines don't line up with what your alternatives really are. And then the third thing I want to say is you need to know what's really important to you. I remember one time I was mediating a case and a guy got an offer that was not a very good offer, but he was going to do worse if he didn't accept it. And he chose not to accept it. And he said to me that if he doesn't accept it, he's going to lose. But if he does accept it, he'll never be able to look himself in the mirror again. And I really respected his choice, because he made a choice that was very difficult. And chances are that was worse in some tangible ways than accepting the deal. But he did that knowingly. And he did that based on what was important to him. So I think it's really important to know what's important to you in the situation. The other thing is you want to also engage the other party as a partner. You won't get everything you want maybe, but you might be able to get some more for yourself just by not giving up right away.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. And Kathleen?
Hi, thank you, Diana, and thank you, Moshe?
Moshe,
Moshe. So I've been in the comp space for a few years now. My question to you guys is, with pay transparency, we know that for ages, talking about compensation, it has been considered taboo amongst coworkers. But now with pay transparency and trying to build more pay equity and reducing some bias in the workplace, how do you see that contributing or changing the landscape around negotiating?
So, I'm happy to jump in on this, but Dana, feel free to jump over me if you want. So, I think there's always information asymmetries when people negotiate. One side knows more than the other side does. And I'll give you an example from another field. 50 years ago, if you were buying cars, you were doing it in the dark. There was so much information that the car dealer knew that you didn't know. Well, then somebody went off and invented this thing called the internet. And now you can know almost as much about the car as the dealer. You can probably research what every bolt and every feature on that car cost. And it's even the playing field in terms of knowledge asymmetry. Also, because of the internet, you now get to see what all the other car dealers in the entire country are selling that same car for. Now, what that does is it changes the conversation. In a way, it takes a lot of the posturing and a lot of the competitiveness out of the conversation. And I think in a way, it's a very healthy thing, because if there is more transparency, it gives the opportunity for more interest-based conversations. I remember one time I was working as an engineer right out of college, and my friend got a much bigger raise and promotion than I did. And I ended up having a conversation with my boss about it, and he was able to articulate, what particular skills my friend had that I didn't have and the importance of those skills for the company, and explained that that's why he got the better terms. Now, the marching orders to me were that if I want to get something similar, I've got to develop my skills in those areas. So in a way, it created a much more collaborative conversation. I was able to hear what he had to say and be able to understand what I need to do to get to get the things I want in a way that would have been harder had I just known the numbers. So I think that transparency is actually a good thing.
And knowing what to do with that information too, like you said, Moshe, just because, it may be transparent or visible doesn't mean that there can't be conversations or challenging the assumptions you may have of what people are doing and why they're doing it. So by asking more questions and getting more information and getting the dialogue more focused on what you want the outcome to be, that can be really helpful, even if it may seem like an initial barrier.
Yep. I think that's very important. There's a couple of questions in the DM, and then I think we might need to wrap up because I think we're at the end of time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathleen. Thank you for your question. So there's one question about, if you gave a range and were expecting the midpoint of that range, but they offered you the lower part of that range, what do you do about it? Can you still negotiate? So my take on it is you can always still negotiate. You might not be successful, but you can always try. The second thing is, I think your tactical error going into it was giving a range hoping for the midpoint. You see, if you give people a range, you've already told them that you're willing to entertain the lower part of that range. So if I'm the employer and you tell me that you're willing to accept between 60 and 70 for this job, I'm thinking, okay, they're willing to accept 60. Now, the fact that you said 60 to 70 because you said you were hoping for 65, that's not where my head is. So then maybe phrasing it that way is actually hurting you more than helping you. To say instead something like, I was hoping for something around 65, that is going to be much more likely to get you the 65 than saying 60 to 70. And because once you give a range, you've essentially signaled that the lower part of that range is also acceptable to you. I hope that was helpful. The last question that came in was, what are the narratives going on in the mind of the other person that you're negotiating with? And the answer to that is, I have no idea. And you have no idea. Because anything that you guess or assume about what their narratives are is really likely to lead you in the wrong direction. And the only way to find out what someone's narratives are is to ask them. And in order to ask them in a way that they're going to actually tell you, you've got to be really skilled at asking questions, drawing out information, and listening. And we're planning on, like I said, this is the first of a three-part series. We're planning on addressing that skill in particular in one of the subsequent sessions. But you don't know what's in their head until they tell you. And there's no way to find out unless they tell you. And then you also have to realize that they're not always going to tell you everything that's in their head, and they're not necessarily going to tell you the truth. So that's where your ability to ask good questions, draw them out, listen, ask additional questions, and really hone in on what's going on. That's going to be the place that that you're going to be successful. So Diana, okay, Rahul, we're going to let you in, and you're going to have the very last question because we're already over time. So Rahul, go ahead, and then we'll just say a few words to wrap up. Rahul, can you hear us?
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, we can hear.
Yes.
Thanks for giving me an opportunity to ask a question. My question is, supposedly I interviewed for company A and I converted offer, but there is another company B I am still interviewing for. It will take me, 2 to 3 weeks to get the results, and most probably I will convert that as well. So how can I get more buy time for company A, which has given me 10 days to accept that offer? What are the ways, what reasons I can give, to delay signing that offer, so that I can potentially negotiate in later?
That's a pretty tough situation, and it happens very frequently. So, what you can do is you can, first of all, just ask them for more time to say, if there's a relocation involved, you can say, I have to investigate the whole moving thing. If there's a, you have to leave a current position, you say, I need to just think about what's the best timing. And you have two negotiations that are simultaneous here. On one hand, you're trying to negotiate with them to buy time, and you don't even actually have to give them a reason. Just ask them. They give you 10 days to respond, and you say, I need a little bit more time to think of it. I think about this. Can I have 3 weeks? Right? You never know until you ask. They might say yes. And then simultaneously, you're negotiating with the other company to try to speed up things, because you can tell them that you are trying to decide between a number of opportunities, and you really like the position, but don't want to find yourself in a position where you're have to reject them because you've accepted something else. So you're trying to negotiate in both of those directions. That's not an easy thing to do. And then, there's sometimes the ethical question of, do you accept the first one knowing that you might rescind? And that is a much longer conversation that we can't get into, but I'm happy to get into it a subsequent session. All right, I saw a couple more hands, but I really do think that we need to wrap this up. We do have two more sessions, and I'm happy to entertain other questions. If you have more questions for us, please feel free to contact certainly me directly. My email is moshe@negotiatingtable.com, and you can contact me through Fishbowl as well. And if you want to contact Diana, that's up to you, Diana, as well.
Yeah, we both have our LinkedIn, I believe, LinkedIn profiles are connected. So feel free to reach out that way, or catch us for the next session, which Moshe is on.
Is in 2 weeks.
Yes, 2 weeks.
And if you want to, meanwhile, take a look at some of these subjects in greater depth. I go a lot into the relationship between managing emotions and negotiating effectively in Collie Wobbles, and it's available everywhere. So Feel free to check it out. It's available as a book, as an audiobook, and as an ebook. So it hopefully you know, some of you will look into that as well. Thank you for being such a great audience. Look forward to hearing your voices on another session. And if you enjoyed this conversation, please follow us on Fishbowl by clicking our profiles so you'll be notified of future events.
Thank you all. Look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.
That's all, folks. Thanks again for listening to Hardly Working. Join us live next time and talk directly to the speakers and, who knows, end up here. Fishbowl is a social network where professionals of the same industry have anonymous career conversations. You can download Fishbowl on the App Store or Google Play. If you want to host a Fishbowl live event, get in touch at live@fishbowlapp.com. See you soon!